This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Green Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. We don't, and look, the vast majority of us don't just have one insurance need. We have a lot of insurance needs. Well, because of that, let's be honest, you need to have somebody that can organize it for you, make sure you're fully insured on every front, and do everything they can to save you money in one form or another. And that is our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, so Lakers lost by 41 last night. Very impressive performance.
They have been horrible for the last week. I think I saw last night that only two teams haven't topped 80 points in a game in the NBA, and it was both Los Angeles teams last night. Both scored 80 points, yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
Ooh. Boy. Crazy.
I didn't see his line last night, but LeBron was like 1 of 8 with 14 turnovers the night before in the Lakers game. He's struggling.
Yeah, no, he is struggling right now. I don't know if it's just a slump or whether it's the first sign of finally in this remarkable career fatigue has set in.
I was going to say, Father Time was undefeated until LeBron, but now he's trying to exert himself a little bit here.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing, though, what he's done. Oof. Yeah. Really, he's an amazing player. Yeah, credit where credit's due. He just is.
Joel Embiid missed another game as the opposite end.
And at the other end of the basketball spectrum, or professional spectrum, yikes. That's just... That's got to be hard for Sixer fans. I mean, every time you turn around, the guy that you're counting on to be your guy just doesn't play. And again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know, you know, what his problem is. For all I know, everything he's saying is absolutely, positively, 100% legit, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue is just how they're handling it. I saw Keith Pompey post a video from last night's press conference where he asked Nick Nurse about it, and it doesn't seem like Nick knows much what's going on. Like, he's kind of just as much in the dark as the rest of us.
Well, again, I've said this many times on the show when it comes to the medical part. I think there's some sort of this isn't the 60s. Where said coach walks up and says, hey, you're playing tonight, and you play. This is an era right now where, guess what? You go out there, and if you say you can't go, you can't go. There are three people now that have all the control over whether the player plays or not. It is the doctor, it is the trainer, and the third person's the athlete. You have no idea over the years, Todd, when I've asked about, hey, you know, privately, because there are policies here about releasing injuries. So I would never do that. But I've walked up and I've asked doctors a couple of times, hey, by the way, what is that X's problem? They'll tell me. And they'll look at me and they'll go, to be honest with you, Steve, extremely unimpressive x-rays. In other words, they clear him, but they can't because the player says he can't go. If the player says they can't go, I can't practice, I can't play, you are kind of caught between a rock and a hard place as a coach.
I see... I kind of see that in high school as well. I somebody told me a story a couple years ago that, you know, kids were, you know, if kids didn't want to practice, you get a parent to write a note that, you know, that say this says that you're sick, and they were using headache a lot. And right. One of the football coaches sent out a memo and was like, "No, we can't do that. You can't give me a practice, you know, you can't get them out of practice by saying they have a headache, because as soon as you tell me they have a headache, they have to go into the concussion protocol."
Oh, boy.
So
yeah, and,
you know.
I mean, I'm just saying, but, yeah. But, again, there's a misnomer about injuries, and it's three people. Doctor, trainer, and athlete. If any one of the three says you can't go, you can't go. And that includes the athlete saying, "I can't go. I can't practice. I can't go." So for all we know, Embiid saying, "It doesn't feel right. I can't go." I don't know if he is or not, if he's saying that or not. I'm saying, but he could be. And everybody else, their hands are tied. They can't do anything about it.
And, you know, I honestly don't see much wrong with that, just because I've read enough athlete books from the 50s and the 60s and 70s. You know, to kind of know what happened to those guys when you leave it up to the owners and the coaches to you know, decide if they can go or not.
I mean, it's not as if I've never heard of an athlete here, for example, that said, "I can't go, I can't go." And the doctors and the trainers are like, when they've done the external exams, right?
Yeah.
Have said, "Geez, I don't know. I don't quite see." And then they get the MRI back and went, "Wow, you're right. That has happened." Okay? It's not like that hasn't happened, where they said it just doesn't feel right. They get the MRI back and they look at it and go, "You know what? Right? He or she knew before, like, we figured it out."
And I think part of this is the noise around him too, because a lot of this recent sitting out is after, you know, he got upset with Marcus Haynes and he was upset with how he's being treated in the media as well. And I think that's kind of, it might not be the reason why, but I think that's kind of what it seems like to the outside, what one of the reasons is he's upset with how he was treated by the fans and the media.
Yeah. Yeah. So, interesting.
And, man, if we'd have had this talk in September and you told me this, the Sixers would be like 4-20 or whatever heck they are.
And I wouldn't have believed it.
No
I wouldn't
way.
Have believed it. There's no way I would have believed it. So
I mean, even 4-20 with McClain playing so well, and you know,
yeah,
making the right decision in the draft, and
yeah,
it's almost enough to make me go on a Matt rant.
Nobody gets to that level.
No.
Golly. So well. This game coming up on Saturday, Penn State's going to have to do a good job on the two receivers, Evan Stewart and Tez Johnson. I mean, you look at the game they had with Ohio State, and I watched that game. Those guys had 14 catches for 224 yards, two touchdowns. Now, part of what they did, they did a great job of taking JT Tuilamalo and Jack Sawyer, and their tackles did a good job of forcing them really wide. And then the key was, and remember the week of the Ohio State game I talked about this? They then took the tackles and they moved them wide on each side. That gave Dillon Gabriel the opportunity to step up, climb the pocket, and make plays, which made a big difference in that game. So that's where Zane Durant comes into play here for Penn State. Zane Durant, who inexplicably is honorable mention and not on one of the three teams. That's me. All right? It's just a personal opinion on my part. I think Durant is terrific. And I think if you can get pressure up the middle on Gabriel consistently, it takes away the throwing lanes for him, because he's not big in stature. He's barely 6 feet tall, if that. Okay. And you know, also get your hands up. You have to stop James, first of all, the running back. You're talking about a guy that averaged, you know, like 5.7 yards a carry. And Penn State's defense has been terrific against the run this year, because Penn State's only allowing 2.66 yards per carry. So that's got to be one where Penn State continues to do the job and do it well. The defensive line for Oregon's done a good job for the most part against the run. They did a great job against Travion Henderson and Quinson Judkins. But they did give up explosive plays to Ashton Jeanty of Boise State, and Henderson did have one as well. That's huge for them. And the other part, too, is that, as Brad said, when you look at Oregon, their offensive line is better than you think. And that's why I talked about what they did to JTT and to Sawyer and what they did to the tackles inside. I think it made a big difference in how they played that thing. Big difference. And that's part of what I think is will be one of the keys in this game, as to how they play that. And also, they've been susceptible to teams throwing the ball against them. Wisconsin, what did they do against them? Wisconsin did a great job of limiting big plays. They only allowed one play longer than 25 yards against Oregon, and twice turned them away in the red zone. And again, only one play of 25 yards or better. Penn State needs to be right around that neighborhood. Just give up. They have to 25-yard plays. If they can give up just 1-3 in this game, they'd be in a good spot, because they thrive on that. Meanwhile, guess what? You can throw the ball on Oregon. You can throw it on them. And Penn State's going to have to get their fair share of completions throwing the ball against this team. If they're finding some consistent success in the passing game, that'll be big. If they can break a long run the way Jeanty did, the way Henderson did, that goes a long way as well. All right, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday. Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai. North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Spent a lot of time today talking about the Big Ten Championship game, which kicks off 8 o'clock on CBS. Steve and Jack will be on the air at 6:30, Penn State and Oregon. Also tonight, big game, Big Ten opener for the Penn State men's basketball team. They face Purdue. Should be a fun one. We talked to Dick Girardi about that one yesterday. Actually, one I'm looking forward to, got a little bit of a chance to Watched some Big Ten basketball this week with football wrapping up. Saw a little bit of Michigan and Wisconsin on, I believe it was Tuesday night. That was actually a fun one to watch. And it was the second time I got a chance to see Michigan. And they're a little scary with the 2 7-footers. They play a nice two-man game with Danny Wolf and the Golden Kid. I think if you remember Dusty May's team at Florida Atlantic, they made the Final Four 2 years ago. He was the 7-footer for that Florida Atlantic team. And, you know, they brought him and Danny Wolf as a transfer from Yale. And, you know, it's just a fun little two-man game that they play. I think one of the things I didn't realize was how well that Danny Wolf handles the ball and can kind of be the feeder for that. And they kind of run their offense through him when he's not in foul trouble. And I was really impressed with Michigan getting that win. And, you know, I think what Greg Gard has done at Washington the last, you know, kind of remaking that team from last year. And John Tonji was a real good pickup in the transfer portal. He's a real interesting player to watch play, too. He's somebody that can get to the basket and shoot the rock. And, you know, I started subscribing to Seth Davis's Hoops IQ, and they had a real good story on him and how he's kind of, you know, made a jump every year from the time he's kind of picked up the basketball. You know, he was like a 2-point-per-game scorer as a sophomore and ended up leading his team in scoring in high school and didn't get a lot of looks and has gradually moved up. And the only kind of downfall to his game was last year was kind of some injury troubles, and it's not coming to me which school he was at last year. And, you know, transferred to Wisconsin and I think made a name for himself when he had that 38-point game, I think it was, a couple weeks ago on a Friday night near the beginning of the seasons against Arizona.
Yeah. That's
And, you know, that's, you know, we talked a lot about in the fall about how deep the Big Ten football-wise is, but, you know, looking at some of the basketball teams, that basketball league is going to be pretty darn deep, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see tonight starting with Penn State and Purdue. That's what Penn State has out of the gate in the conference. I think it's a good time to get them. Braden Smith, I think, is a terrific player. I mean, really. I have so much respect for his game, how he protects the ball, his decision-making. Really impressed with him. Now, Lawyer is shooting lights out, to his credit. 59% from three, Todd. 59%. They're averaging 1.8 points per shot from him. How about that? They're averaging 1.8 points per shot from Lawyer. Holy mackerel. Now, does he have gaps in his game? Of course he does. And I've talked about that. He's not the world's greatest defender. That's one. He's also not the world's best ball handler, two, which if you're pressing, is an issue. That is an issue, okay? And then the last part is that I'm not going to get into who impersonated who in practice, but the player that impersonated him in practice can flat out shoot, but is also an excellent driver. And that's what they kept reminding him. They said, look, okay, he doesn't drive the ball. Get out in his face, he doesn't drive the ball. But boy, if he's out there as a standstill shooter, I'm not going to say he's the best standstill shooter in the country, Todd, because it would be unfair. I haven't seen everybody. But boy, he's got to be one of the top 10. And then Kaufman Wren, they don't have rim protection. Now, I know Edie was a different kind of rim protector because I think just by being there, he had people changing their minds about going in or they altered shots because of him. He didn't have a boatload of like 150 block shots in a year. No, he didn't. He had block shots, but not to that volume. But the number of shots that he altered or made you think twice about going in there, that's worth a shot block. And they don't have that with this team. They do have, you know, like Will Berg is a big player, right? Caleb First is 6'10", but he's more of an outside guy. Kaufman Wren, really terrific finisher around the basket. Good rebounder, too. But he's not a shot blocker. Okay? And then they've got a couple of guys that are going to be really good players for them. Cam Heidi and Miles Colvin. Colvin hit the game winner against Ole Miss. That's just our typical through the Purdue system, well regarded, right? Matt takes them in as three or four stars, four star guys makes them 5-star players. I mean, they do a great job of player development at Purdue. Great job. Now the two freshmen have been struggling. Right? So and I mean that's just something that you look at it. But Trey Kaufman Wren, you know, again, may not be a rim protector, but this guy is averaging like 7 rebounds a game. 2.5 of them are offensive rebounds. But to be honest with you, Yannick's averaging more than 2 offensive rebounds a game, too. Should be a good matchup tonight. I'm looking forward to it. 6:30 on at 6. I know we have Santa tonight, right?
Yes.
I guess what Matt's brought his kids in 3 times. What are we doing here?
Dropping names.
By the way, Eric Bieniemy, 1 year at UCLA as the offensive coordinator, is out.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour, by the way, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. 6 great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All the Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. James Creepy joins us from the Oregonian. James, welcome. What a pleasure to have you.
Appreciate you for having me on.
All right. So Dan Lanning makes the transition from a Pac-12 schedule to a Big Ten schedule where the world is telling them you got to be physical in the Big Ten Conference. It seemed like he already had the makings of that. Am I being fair about my assessment?
Yeah. For those who are in the Big Ten footprint who were blissfully unaware that football was played west of the Mississippi River prior to 2024. Oregon was awfully successful, and there was somebody out here named Mario Cristobal who generated quite a long line of NFL offensive linemen. Dan Lanning and company inherited a cupboard that wasn't bare. Particularly on offense, and they added and enhanced significantly in many spots, especially on defense. And when you take a good situation and make it better, lo and behold, you were able to hit the ground running very effectively with a move to the Big Ten. So Oregon was best positioned of the 4 West Coast schools. They were far and away the best position roster-wise for not just the physicality of the Big Ten, but every aspect of it, the physicality, the travel, the 8 games in 8 weeks that nobody else had to do, you name it. They were equipped, and they were ready to hit the ground running. And as I say, that off-season trope was extremely overblown when it came to Oregon.
Well, I'll give you an example, because there have been a long time Big Ten writers, and I'm going back into the 90s here, James, but just to let you know about the attitude in the conference, when Joe Tiller came into the conference, he's at Purdue, and look, he says, he throws the ball. Joe Tiller's the one that changed the conference. I mean, he changed it above everybody else because he threw it. And they used to do these weekly teleconferences, and each coach got about 7 or 8 minutes with the media. And it was, I don't know, mid to late October. And one of the writers, one of the old-time writers, said to Joe Tiller, or asked him, he says, this passing game you have, he says, I mean, do you think that's actually, he actually said, actually going to work in November in the Big Ten? And Tiller had the best response. He says, I ran this offense in Wyoming, and that's not exactly the banana belt. So, that's the attitude that Oregon had to deal with. Conversely, I love the duck floating down the river. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they've certainly not been shy from a branding standpoint at this institution, and that goes back the whole generation. And that's, you know, like I say, for those of a certain age, this is the only Oregon that they know. Those of a different age, they remember the 95 Rose Bowl and that being the dawn of the Oregon that we know today. Obviously, a game that went Penn State's way back at that time, but that was really the beginning of the modern Oregon football program that we've all come to know for the last 30 years. But that was a major turning point. That season, everything about that season was the turning point. And like I say, and ever since then, yes, the branding and Nike and everything else that's come with it has certainly raised the profile in an awfully big way.
All right. Bo Nix, of course, did such great things in his 2 years there. 1 year with, I think it was Kenny Dillingham and then Will Stein. Dylan Gabriel left Oklahoma, comes into Oregon. What has he brought to the table that's impressed everybody there?
The same level of accuracy and efficiency as Bo, really, in a lot of ways. And I'd say compared to Bo last season, probably a little bit more mobility and willingness with the legs, whereas Bo in his first season at Oregon definitely did more running in Dillingham's offense and really had to, in fairness, where the receiving core didn't have as many weapons as it did in his second season, and he was intent on staying in the pocket more and developing more as a pocket passer and staying there and relying more on the weapons and less on his legs, which got him a minor injury the year before. Well, yeah, and you saw what the results were, and it looked, obviously, set the record for accuracy in a season. Gabriel is kind of the mix of all of those things. He's the accuracy and the efficiency, yes, with some checkdowns, much as Nix did, but also with the vertical passing game, because his receiving core is awfully good as well. And he's added and has the ability to escape the pocket and move around quite a bit with his legs, which was always an asset of his, whether it was at Oklahoma or UCF. So I say it's kind of an amalgamation of his own traits combined with some of the things that we've seen before with Nix the past couple of years.
This is as under a radar number one team as I've seen because let's face it, ESPN carrying the SEC. It's SEC, SEC, SEC. They don't talk as often about Oregon. But they had, the Ohio State game is one thing, James. I mean, that's, that's two top teams head-to-head, great game. Oregon won the game. But what wasn't smooth in the Boise State game and what wasn't smooth in the Wisconsin game?
Well, the Boise State game and, for that matter, the Idaho game the week before, the first 2 weeks of the season, everything was about the offensive line. Everything. Yeah. Everything off was just boiled down to the offensive line was in bordering on disarray. That's the bottom line of it all. And the Boise State game specifically, they had 11 different offensive line combinations in less than 60 plays.
Right.
So they switched around, they changed it 11 times with four different combinations. So they were all over the place. So that you talk about consistency there, there was not. They were trying anything. They turned it around very quickly the week after and basically have been one of the best offensive lines in the country. They're a Joe Moore Award finalist despite those first 2 weeks because of how good they've been since. They've gotten much more consistent at the center position, though it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but much better there. And even when dealing with an injury at one of the guard spots, they've been able to plug that hole and not have an issue. So that was the biggest thing there. Defensively, they've been consistent the whole year outside of four or five carries by Ashton Jeanty, which, again, those of us out here knew in real time that that would stand the test of time. And as the season has gone on, yes, lo and behold, that guy does that to a lot of people. But if you take those four or five carries away from this Oregon defense, yeah, they've been consistent against the run and really in just about every other phase and aspect all season long. So, again, if you put that as an aside and chalk it up to a great player doing what great players do sometimes, yeah, it's forgivable. Wisconsin, they were dealing with, for a couple of weeks, the absence of Tez Johnson, and they were trying to mask some things and cover up for some things offensively in those couple of games. And I think it kind of came back to bite them a little bit in Wisconsin. And that also doesn't take away from what Wisconsin's defense did, because I thought Wisconsin's defense just played them better than any defense all season. And not just because it was a close game. I thought they just played and executed really, really well. And credit to them, to Luke Fickell and his staff, and also for the fact that they were the first of a couple of opponents in a row there for Oregon who were coming off bye weeks the week before. And Oregon was playing its eighth game in 8 weeks. And, yeah, you got the results that you saw on a cool night in Madison.
And again, those are the games where they've been challenged. So you have to ask when you get a chance, because Penn State had to win in overtime against USC. Penn State beat Minnesota by one. You're not going to negotiate a season like this unless that happens. I'm sure everybody there, or the vast majority of people, expected this to be Ohio State this week. What was the reaction when they found out it was Penn State instead?
Well, I would say, you know, from the masses, from fans, certainly, I'd say that was probably a degree of expectation. And after all, how couldn't it be? Because I think that talking point for the better part of the last, whatever we're up to now, five, 6 days, I had to get us to be framed accordingly. It's not a slight at Penn State. It's a knock of acknowledging the reality that Ohio State was a three-touchdown favorite against the six-win Michigan team, who, you know, outside of anybody believing in the maize and blue, who was going to believe that upset was going to happen? And you had Ohio State players saying weeks before that, you know, they were going to see Oregon again. So clearly they were looking ahead to a matchup as well. Bottom line, from inside the program and the like, you didn't have much by way of a reaction time to be had. Were they aware before their game with Washington that Ohio State had lost? Yeah. But in terms of how long did they have to react or do anything, not much, because then they were jumping into pregame and going through their deal at that point. But from the masses and from fans out here, like I say, they also didn't have exactly a ton of time, because most of them were tailgating and watching the game, or if they were watching at home. So, you know, some, I'm sure, were pretty amused to see Ohio State take a lump again, and I'm sure there were others who were looking forward to an awfully, you know, pretty big football game, but weren't exactly looking past or looking down at this matchup either.
Yeah, because Jack Ham and I were watching in the Penn State broadcast booth, but we were doing the pregame show at the time. So, James, it was one of those, like, okay, glance over, miss field goal, glance over again, miss field goal, glance over, interception. Every time I glanced over, something bad was happening. And it actually took a little bit to absorb that, wait a minute, Penn State wins this game, they're in it. It just, you know, because it was, let's face it, I know Michigan's now beaten them 4 years in a row, but offensively, that Michigan team can't compete with Ohio State. They can't, yet they won the game. And that's what really struck me about that. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah. I mean, call it what it is. They were a better coached team again.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have an offense that is one of the worst in the country with a quarterback who effectively, and I don't knock the young man, but he's a walk-on who can't throw. And he doesn't have the only weapon at his disposal. He is not available.
Yeah.
And they go on the road and manage to win.
You're right, yeah.
Against an offense with that kind of firepower that may have been one of the worst play-called games with that allotment of talent, maybe in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. It takes absolute ineptitude by the favorite with the talent advantage, and it takes supreme execution by the literal and proverbial underdog. And again, credit to them. They were the better coach team yet again in that matchup.
James, I have to ask you, because this question is born out of the Maryland experience. Every time I go down to broadcast a game at Maryland, especially in basketball, they lament as a fan base and even in media as well about no longer being in the ACC. Now, look, the Pac-12 essentially doesn't exist anymore. It sort of does. What's the fan reaction to the fact that no Pac-12, but it's the Big Ten now?
Even those of an extreme age segment at this point, anybody who is holding on to nostalgia and waxing poetic about, gosh, couldn't things just be geographic and stay as they were from 100 years ago, those voices have long since silenced themselves.
Okay.
First off, go back to when the LA schools got invited.
Yeah,
most everybody among the masses who knew where this was headed knew this was an eventuality regardless. It was a matter of when, not if. And once the LA schools got in and got invited, it became urgent. And I think that became urgent not just from those who matter and those in power and those with influence and those who get the task done, but urgent from fans who saw that as well, because there was no viability to the Pac-12 going forward.
Right.
And if you position yourselves accordingly, as this institution has, as this athletic department has, and specifically the football program has, you don't leave yourself that vulnerable to a degree of risk of being on Apple TV.
Nice.
That is not a palatable alternative. So, but now what are they saying? You know, a year in, they didn't need the success on the field or on the court so far. They didn't need that to validate anything. This fan base didn't like the inaccessibility of the Pac-12 network. Who did?
Right.
They didn't like some of the Pac-12 After Dark game times. There weren't too many of those, and the ones that were usually on the road this season. Hey, lo and behold, funny thing happens when you get to a bigger conference that has major national television network deals. Yeah. The reach and the exposure is there. That's part of it. Yeah. And again, of course, obviously the success on the field just furthers it, but no, truly. Even for those who at the beginning were holding on to nostalgia, you don't hear them anymore. I've not gotten too many emails waxing poetic about, gosh, if only they could have been playing Cal, that just would have made it so much better.
Yeah. So let me... One final question about this. When Penn State joined the Big Ten, and so this is back in the early 90s, and I was talking with Joe Paterno, and I said, what are the challenges of a revamped schedule? And he says, Steve, we have to learn everybody. Now, I realize in the transfer portal era, there's going to be changes, right? But he said, you have to learn everybody. He said, I could look at the West Virginia left tackle, and he's back, and I can say, well, he's a little bit better, he's improved, or he's about the same as he was before. I said, we have to learn everybody. So this is going to be the seventh different Big Ten opponent that was not on the Oregon schedule before. My question is, what kind of job did Dan Lanning and his staff do in making sure that they were prepared for people week after week they hadn't seen before, besides UCLA, USC, and Washington?
Well, and they didn't even play SC this season.
Right, that's right, yeah. Sorry.
I don't think that, you know, drawing the analogy to history there, look, we're operating in a different world now. When you've got the expansion of staffs and support staffs to the scale that exists now, you know, we're not putting together physical tape here. You know, you've got an army of support staff, of analysts, of GAs, and et cetera,
yeah,
who spend entire off seasons plotting through, you know, digital film and doing all the due diligence. That's what the off season looks like. And yeah, you do it for everybody who's on your schedule. And then as the season progresses, if you're setting up for postseason sorts of opportunities, yeah, there's all sorts of scouting that goes into that as well. But again, that's not new. I'm not going to say that's unique to Oregon and claim like they were some savants that you know, they were ahead of the curve or, you know, doing something so revolutionary or different. That's everybody nowadays. That's if you're at the big kids table and you're not doing that, that's dereliction of duty at this point. What did they do? They did what everybody else was doing. How did they do it better? They had better players.
that's shocking.
That's kind of the key. Yeah.
That's shocking.
I don't think it was because they just had this incredible insight of film was there. No, they just had really better players.
No. I mean, better players is big, but I do give them credit. That's just a lot of people to learn. I know you got a bigger staff. It's a little bit different than like, hey, I know what they played
not
Oregon
for nothing.
State.
I don't think if they had 1 hour of preparation for Purdue, which they basically did because they had a desperate coach taking over who had called one game before and a quarterback who had, you know, they had nothing to go off of effectively. Hmm. And yeah, you saw I don't think if they had no preparation against Purdue that Purdue would have scored in that game. So, in fairness, there were some matchups that were awfully favorable as well.
I was going to give you 15 minutes. No, on the Purdue thing. All right. Yeah, because Penn State saw them as well. I don't even know if Purdue practiced taking a knee in practice. All right. James, I assume you'll be in Indianapolis, right?
Absolutely.
Great. Look forward to seeing you there and appreciate the time you gave us today. It was terrific.
Thanks so much.
All right, we'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. 6 great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Stock up for your home tailgate for the weekend, and also because it's the holidays, how about Brewers Outlet gift cards? Great idea. They, people you give them to love them, and boy, does it bail you out when it comes time to sit there and go, what do I do? What do I get? Brewers Outlet gift card solves a lot of that and puts a smile on the face of the person receiving. Todd, great weekend. No show tomorrow because we have Shikellamy Wrestling at 1 o'clock.
I will enjoy my day off. I'll be watching some PIAA football championships.
Sounds great. Sounds like a lot of fun. Great to have everybody with us. Our thanks to Brad Nessler, James Creepy from the Oregonian joining us as well here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.